Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. On this week's episode, we'll be discussing the Bochum and Knoxville regionals from this past weekend, break down those results, talk about the decks that did well. No surprise, Lugia V-Star, pretty strong still. We'll be talking about the Pokemon Presents that just was revealed yesterday, today when we're recording this, but yesterday, for those of you who are listening to this podcast on the day it came out, which was, of course, also Pokemon Day. So happy Pokemon Day to all of the Pokemon fans listening. We'll have Guess That Flavor Text, and we'll close out the episode by chatting about a post-rotation event that went down in Japan this past weekend, the Champions League, Aichi, and it had over 3,000 players. We'll break it down, talk about the decks that did well, give us a little bit of a preview of what we have to come in about a month. My name is Chip Ritchie, and I'm joined here, as always, by my friend and co-host, coming off a day two finish at Knoxville, Azul GG. What's up, Azul? How we doing, man?
Doing all right. Yeah, day two Knoxville. Had a pretty good start to day one. Started like 6-1, and then I kind of bombed out from there. Lost to Justin, Bukari, and then ended up with a tie on the winning in round in a lost box mirror. And then day two didn't go very well overall. Played an interesting build of lost box. We were kind of, me and the squad were kind of cooking last minute. And the deck was like, okay. I think the deck would have been a little bit better if we just kind of tried to ride on a little bit more straightforward consistency. We added a couple gimmicks towards the end of the cooking process, and it was, yeah, the list was like okay overall. Maybe should have just ran back something more similar to what we played at OCIC. Maybe I was like thinking like taking the OCIC and just kind of adding a Raikou V into the deck to have a little bit more options against the Lugia matchup. But I like the deck a lot and the idea behind it. The deck was mostly my idea to try and have just like a really consistent Kyogre build, because we weren't expecting too much wash energy in Lugia builds. There was a couple, but we did rock the Temple of Sinnoh as well. But I think like if we had just gone like minus Echoing Horn, minus Roxanne, plus a third capture, plus a third Quick Ball, that would have made the deck quite a bit more consistent. I had multiple games where I opened Roxanne, Echoing Horn in my opening hand, and I wished they were
so
just
tilting,
ways to find Pokemon.
So tilting.
Yeah, it's like one of them, okay, both of them, and then literally I like Comfy three times and can't find a battle VIP pass or anything. It's like, okay, it's kind of tilting. Yeah, so just had a little bit of trouble getting off the ground, and that's kind of what the deck lives on. Like there's the power of the Kyogre, but besides that, you don't really have that many powerful attackers, right? Like there's the Zamazenta to kind of answer stuff, but you don't really have that many powerful attackers besides the late game Kyogre, which you can get to eventually, of course, but I think it'll be like the adjustments, but overall, I think the deck is still pretty solid. Like Kyogre's just still really strong. Find the best way to work with it is kind of the task right now. And then also before Knoxville, I did go to CGC. I'm part of the team CCG with Kid Stark, Daniel Tavilla, and Caleb Gittimer, and they had us all out to the headquarters down in Sarasota, which is super cool from them. And that was a ton of fun. Had a ton of fun doing that. It's like a fun little invitational. There was like some prominent figures in like the collecting space and just kind of the Pokemon TCG community in general outside of the competitive stuff. Like Chum Lee was there and stuff, so that was pretty cool. Played in that. And they graded my, I actually don't have it on me, I would show it on camera if I had it. They graded my champion card from OCIC, like on working with them so far and, you know, representing them and stuff. So that's been super sick. They're also going to be grading.
Hang on, say what you just said, by the way, real quick. I think I messed up the... I clicked the wrong button on OBS and it just transitioned away for a second. You were talking about grading. They graded your champion card on the spot.
Yeah, they graded my champion card like on the spot there. The champion card from OCIC. It only got an 8.5. The champion cards are never really in that good of condition. Yeah. It'd be really hard to ever pull a 10 on a champion card, I think. But still, just getting it cased up and all that stuff is super cool. They're gonna be grading some of my other trophy cards as well, and I'll be getting those a little bit later. So I'm excited to see what those get. I'll probably open those on stream when I get those back. But also, which is something really cool that they offered to do for me, is they're going to not grade, but like encapsulate my winning deck. So they're gonna
like the actual 60 cards you use.
The 60 cards, yeah. That's every really card cool. is gonna be cased. They're not gonna be graded because the cards are not in that good of condition. So I had to borrow a whole new set of lost box stuff from Caleb this weekend. Thankfully he has a lot of cards, so But yeah, they took my whole deck and they're going to encapsulate it, every card individually in a case. So that's going to be super sick. Cool, so I'm super excited for that. And I'm probably going to be giving away some of those cards, I think, as well, eventually, like on stream or.
No shot. You got to keep them all together, bro.
I don't need all 60. I give away a couple of them.
But that's the whole point, though, is that you keep all, like, you keep the set together, you know?
I'll see what I'll do with it. When I get it back and. I'll decide to do with it. I don't think I need all 60, but maybe the important ones.
That would be. I cannot imagine you having all 60 of the cards encapsulated as a set together and then breaking up the set. That is unbelievably cringe. But you know,
I'll definitely keep the. I would definitely keep the escape ropes. Sure. Those are key.
Dang,
the key cards for the deck.
Reagan crying right now.
Yeah, but I've been on the road for the past. Basically two or three. Say I got back. I had one day back before I went out to Florida, Sarasota, from there to Knoxville. So 2-3 weeks in a row of travel between beginning of Australia to now. So I'm pretty tired. I mean, Vancouver's not that far away as well. Vancouver's coming up, you know, in 2 weeks or whatever. So I've got like a week to recuperate, and then I'm driving up to Vancouver for that regional. But Chip, you were on the desk again, or were you doing the lounge this time, right?
That's right. Yeah, I did the lounge. Yeah, it was my second time. I did it in Toronto. I have to say I did enjoy it a bit more in Toronto because I did not have to share the space quite as much. But we have just one lounge set up for all three broadcasts, right? So in Toronto, VG was not back at tournaments yet. So it was okay. We just shared it with Go every once in a while, but it was never really like we didn't overlap too much. But now between Pokemon Go, between us and the VGC, we're having a fight over the lounge. So it's like our round will finish at the same time as like VG, who just finished their round 2 minutes ago. So they're in there first. They're having to do their interview in the lounge, and I'm having to just go sit at the desk and do the interview, which is fine, but it's just way worse than doing it in the lounge, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's still great. I love doing the lounge segments and all that stuff. I don't feel like I got to do all of the things I had planned that I wanted to do this time. But you know, maybe through the rest of the season, there will be more things that I can try to do. I did get to interview Real Breaking Nate on the stream, which was kind of cool. He came on and chatted with me for a little bit. He's a pretty big pack opening YouTuber. He was there doing some recording, working on a video. And so we chatted for a little bit. And then we actually had a game on stream where Connor just like double dead drew. I think it was against Brandon actually. It wasn't, because we had Brandon on versus Pramawat. It was versus Lance, I think, where Connor just like lost really fast and Lance Bradshaw just kind of won really fast, you know, just Lugia mirror things that'll happen sometimes. Yep. And we had 30 minutes to kill, and so we did a caster showdown match with some GLC decks, which was actually a lot of fun. And I went back and watched the Twitch VOD, and it seemed like in the comments and the chat, people were like loving it. They were all about it. So that was really cool to see. I want to do more fun things like that on the broadcast when we have the time to do it. The thing is we just don't always have the time, right? If every round goes to time, we have 5 minutes to fill before the next round. We can do a quick little interview or something or talk about the meta breakdown. But other than that, we're just getting into the next round, right? So...
Yeah. It was cool that you guys were able to put, like, I saw that. I remember looking over at the stream and seeing you guys playing GLC. It's cool that you guys put it together so fast. And now you kind of have an idea of, like, doing that kind of stuff moving forwards. Because it's definitely nice to have, like, different things to kind of shake up the downtime instead of repeating the same stuff to break up the downtime.
Yeah, and I will say, like, a byproduct of having to share the lounge space was that I think they replayed the same handful of videos, like, a lot over the weekend. I mean, it's cool they've been making these videos. After every single tournament, they've been having one of the casters, usually whoever does the analyst role, make like a recap video of that tournament. And so they just played those videos, which I think they're great. They're good production quality, but it just gets a little repetitive when you've heard the same video, the same like 2 minute video 15 times throughout a broadcast. Right.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I guess like, you get to do I remember at Peoria, doing the sideline interviews, you get to do less of those, I imagine, because of... Did you do any of those this weekend?
Yeah, that was like when I would just randomly pull in. I guess the only one I really did was the one with Nate, with Breaking Nate.
Yeah.
Pulled him in. I had one planned that I kind of wanted to do. It didn't come to fruition.
Wasn't he on the mainstream, though? That was on the stream desk, wasn't it?
It was on the stream desk. Yeah. It was not in the lounge because I brought him back. We needed to fill some time. I brought him back. And we're like, all right, we're going to do this. And VG had their round end. and so they needed the lounge for their interview. And it's like the interview takes precedent over the the little segment, which makes sense. It's fine. It's just annoying that we, you know, can't sit in the lounge. We can't use the lounge. I don't disagree, but you know, I think that you know,
hopefully one day
they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll get it worked out. I think that it became pretty evident early on into the first tournament with VG back that sharing the space between three streams was going to be a little bit of a problem. So I'm sure they'll work something out, but yeah, other than that, it was great. Really fun weekend. Thanks again to Pokemon for bringing me out as always. It was a quick turnaround from Australia. I was home for 3 days with my family and then right back out to Knoxville. So we at least have a little bit more time here before next tournament's coming up, but yeah, it was an absolute blast. But yeah, we can go ahead and transition into the rest of the episode, Azul. And we do have to kind of start things off on a little bit of a somber note. We did want, Azul and I talked about this before, and we, you know, did want to bring this up. The Pokemon community did lose a really prominent member of both the TCG and video game communities. Angel Miranda passed away unexpectedly this past weekend. He was not someone who I knew very well, but I have a lot of mutual friends with him and I've known who he is. And I know, like, from just talking to people, hearing his name come up and just from seeing the outpouring of love for him, after he passed this weekend on Twitter and stuff, that he was someone who was very well known and respected and loved by the people who were close to him. He seems like he was a really genuine, kind person. Like I said, he's a trading card game and video game player. And he was on track to get his invite in both games this year, which is something I think Pablo Meza did it 1 year, but it's not something very many people have ever done, if anyone besides Pablo has ever done it. But Azul, I know you knew Angel definitely better than I did. But yeah, it's definitely just very, very sad and very unexpected.
Yeah, definitely. It was kind of shocking news here. Like, I wasn't that close with Angel, but it was someone whenever I bumped to them at an event, I would always stop and talk to them. And I was always like, that's the person I would go to, like, whenever I bumped to that event, to like ask them, you know, what's going on in VGC, because like I never really keep up with it too much, but I was always curious, so I'd always ask him whenever he was playing. But yeah, he was playing the TCG, you know, the beginning of this year, because there was no beginning of the season, because there was no VGC top 8 Peoria regionals.
Yep.
So yeah, on track to get the invite in both, and yeah, so I wasn't super close with him, but definitely someone I always chatted with at, you know, any event that I saw him at. So yeah, it was just. And I just talked to him at Orlando Regionals not that long ago, right? Like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now. So definitely unfortunate. Yeah, it just kind of sucks.
Yeah, very sad for sure. We wanted to bring it up. There is a GoFundMe made by, you know, his friends and family. He's really, the New York Pokemon scene is like super tight knit and close, and he was a part of that. And so they've organized this GoFundMe for Angel's family to help with, you know, the funeral costs and all that stuff. So if you feel so compelled, if you knew Angel, or if you just want to, you know, contribute and give back to the a great member of the community and help his family out in this really unexpected and hard time, we'll be leaving a link to the GoFundMe down in the description. We donated as well from the podcast, just a little something to show our support. And hopefully, I mean, it's no easy thing, right, to lose someone, especially so young, right? So I can't imagine the hardship that his family is going through. I mean, all we can hope for is that eventually they'll be able to find peace, but it's not, yeah, not anytime soon for sure. So our thoughts and prayers and all of that stuff is with his family.
So let's get into Knoxville then. Knoxville was this weekend. We also had Bochum, but we can start with Knoxville here, I think, would be the
sure
way to start, because we were both there. And then kind of looking at the, what am I going with here? I was going to say, the meta breakdowns for both terms. We can actually talk about it for both terms. Very similar, I think. Or I guess like the one thing that was similar was the Lugia percentages. It was like 30% or close to 30% day one, and then it increased a little bit going into day two for both of them. It was like 28, yeah, you have this one up here, 28% in Knoxville. And then I think it got up to 33% in day two.
That's
right. And then I think for Bochum, it was like 30% into 30. It was, we know it was 30% day two. We don't know what it was day one, but it was probably about the same thing, right? Maybe a slight increase. So maybe we're looking at 28 to 30% for them as well. And then Lost Box kind of maintained for their Lost Box day one percentage was probably about 20%. And it was 20%. It fell off pretty heavily for us at Knoxville. From 20% down to 11, But then everything else is still pretty reasonable in there as well. Mew dropped down a little bit, not a huge surprise. Vikavolt, there's a lot of Vikavolt at Noxville. 7% day one, up to 11% in day two. Not a huge surprise, I don't think, either. Oh, I guess Mew maintained 11 to 11. And then Reggie's increased a little bit as well. So nothing too shocking, I would say, except besides the Lost Box drop-off was pretty steep.
Yeah, definitely. Some interesting things to note here. Even though it is a massive percent of the meta still in day two, this is the least of a conversion rate we've seen from Lugia. It's really been around 45 plus percent for like pretty much all of these tournaments, at least in North America. And now we look at it's 28 into 33%. I don't know, a little bit more variety and a lot more Vikavolt. Vikavolt is a deck that has been like a 2-4% meta share deck the last few tournaments. It's definitely, I mean, probably I would say closer to the 2%. And then it jumped way up to 7.8% day one and 11% day two. Only one making it into the top eight, but they were battling throughout the day for sure. There was definitely a lot of Vikavolt in contention still throughout the event. Is that meta share something you would have predicted as well, that much Vikavolt?
I think before the tournament, I predicted it to go up to probably about, I think my prediction was like 5%.
Yeah, so for Vikavolt.
His day two conversion rate isn't a huge surprise either for it to see it jump so high. It's one of those fringe decks that I think is like pretty powerful. And I think a lot of good players played it as well at this event. Szymanski got top eight with it. I'm trying to think of like other players that Krekler was in day two with it. Like there were some pretty good solid players playing the Vikavolt. So I think its conversion rate isn't too big of a surprise at all. And then I guess if you look at one thing to mention would be if you look at the meta percentages for Gudra, I don't even think showed up in the day two results for the day. It wasn't even the top six, was it? Like it was number six. And then going to day two, it's not even there. Like Arctur kind of took over, which I think was our prediction as well, that Arctur is probably the better of the two.
Yeah.
Those two decks right now.
And if you look at day one, it was the number six deck, but it only beat out Arctura by one deck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, behind the scenes. We talked about it on the broadcast. So there were 53 players in day one playing Gudra. There were 52 in day one playing Arceus Duraludon. So it was right there. And I would imagine, I didn't actually look at these numbers, but I would imagine if you looked at the day two numbers, that Gudra was probably right behind Arceus Duraludon at like 6-7. I guess we could look even on Pokestats, right, and see how many Gudra. No, there's only three Gudra actually in day two. Interesting.
For what, Noxville? Yeah, it didn't have a very good
conversion
rate at all. And it actually is a little bit interesting. It didn't do great in Noxville. I believe there's one in top 16. And I think they were in contention for top eight at some point, reasonably
early, mid rounds,
because someone was mentioning that they thought so I talked to someone, they're like, oh yeah, Gudra's gonna be in top eight at some point, and then maybe they just like lost two or three in a row from there. I don't know, but when I talked to someone about like who was up towards the top table, someone seemed confident. And then Gudra actually got second place. I'm trying to look at the actual top eight results for the tournaments. Gudra actually got second place in Bochum, losing to Lugia, which isn't a huge surprise because that matchup is kind of tough. But overall, both decks, I guess you could say, did pretty solid, right? And it kind of feels like they might. I feel like Arctura should start to pull ahead as far as percentages goes. But I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of held hands at kind of their percentages moving forwards into, you know, there is a regionals coming up this weekend with Perth regionals. Moving into Perth regionals, I feel like maybe we'll see Arctura and Gudra kind of hold hands for meta percentage. But Perth is a little bit interesting. Once again, so in Australia, I feel like weird when you go into these smaller tournaments like the Australian regionals, the meta percentages matter less, and it's a little bit harder to read them and also take as much away from them going into the bigger ones that we have in like Europe and North America for sure.
Yeah, Perth is always like one of the smaller regionals. I mean, I don't think they've ever crossed 100 players, I don't think, in Perth regionals. So it'll probably be pretty small similarly this time. There's a chance. I mean, there's always a chance, right? They break that 100 mark. But yeah, we'll definitely be keeping our eye and see what happens. I guess we could talk about, so we did some predictions last week based on both of these regional championships, right? So we set our over under for Lugia's in cut at 7.5. We both took the under and we were actually both right this time. There were just two Lugia in top eight of Noxville, and there were four Lugia in top eight of Bochum. So six total. Under 7.5, but a lot more dominant over in Bochum than it was necessarily in Knoxville.
Yeah. Not as quite as dominant in Knoxville. Still, biggest deck played in day two.
Yeah.
Most top players were still bringing it, like, overall compared to any other deck, of course. But I feel like that's kind of just, like, it's almost not even so much that more people were trying to counter Lugia. It's just, like, maybe, I mean, Lugia just kind of had, like, an off tournament, right? Like, I feel like most Lugia players were prepared for most things. We saw it still won Knoxville. Shout out to Hedrick for the back-to-back North American regional wins. Won Orlando regionals right before Australia, and now took down Knoxville regionals once again with Lugia. Pretty similar list as well to what they were running. Looks like the only real switch up from their list from Orlando, I think, might be like the third boss. And they still rock the Irida. Still have the, yeah, no Echoing Horn, no Capturing Aroma.
No Wash Energy.
No Wash Energy, but it's rocking the Irida still alongside the one Vacuum, one Choice Belt, and went up to like three boss. And I believe, could be wrong on that, but three Marnie as well, I think. No, two Marnie.
Two.
And
the third Lugia V-Star.
Third Lugia V-Star, which we saw actually the other top eight lists here in North America also had three Lugia V-Star. And then I think that the top eight lists, I took a look at it real fast as we were going over everything before the show, and I think they were split in the top eight lists. Yeah, two of the top eight lists in Bochum had three Lugia V-Star. Two of them had two Lugia V-Star. And I think that's actually interesting because, like, it feels like maybe it doesn't matter too much. But one of them is definitely, I feel like, correct. And I feel like it's not too meta-dependent, right? Like, I don't think the meta is changing where you'd want two or three one way or the other, right? Am I wrong on that? I feel like the meta doesn't change too much where you'd want two or three.
For the V-Star, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the only matchup where I think you ever even want to attack with two Lugia V-Star, to me at least, it feels like, is Reggie's.
Mirror match sometimes.
Mirror match, I mean...
like, if your first one KOs a Lugia V...
But a lot of times it's like a Lugia V comes in. It's not even the V-Star necessarily at the end of the game, I feel like. I don't know, but having the match... it's definitely... You want two, right? You always want two.
Yeah.
To at least have the option. But I feel like the Reggie matchup is the one where you're like pretty much always going to try to attack with two.
Yeah.
And that's maybe it, right? Like, a lot of other matchups, you get by with just one most of the time.
Yeah, I guess it just ups the consistent. Like, it is like
maybe
plus
like
one
Gudra and stuff like that. You want two, yeah, two Lugia, but
there's also plus one at one plus much. plus one consistency out to an evolution Pokemon, right? So now instead of evolution instanting, yeah, for your V Star, you can evolution instant for an Archaeops, right? So it does add consistency in terms of just pulling off the turn two play as well. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see where lists go from here. I feel like maybe people just, like, because it's just a little bit more consistency, right? And Hedrick even played the two Lugia V-Star in Orlando. So I guess that was like another change. So, but yeah, shout out to Andrew. Back to back. This is the two biggest regionals of the year, right? I think. I don't even know. I don't know how big.
Knoxville,
I forget how big Arlington was.
Yeah, Knoxville is not.
Who the three?
It's the third biggest the this third. Year. It was Orlando, Arlington, then Knoxville. But yeah, yeah, I mean, still, it's pretty friggin' impressive regardless, right? Like,
yeah.
To win any of these big tournaments, you got to get a little lucky somewhere along the way. But like, for the stars to align like that perfectly, two tournaments in a row. Hedrick also started 13-0, by the way. Had a chance to go for the 15-0, which no one's ever gone 15-0. But unfortunately, I think he double drew past against Sally with the Eternatus. And speaking of which, we definitely got to mention the Eternatus getting second place at the tournament. Azul, you've not been a big fan of this deck.
This is
a really interesting list, though. He's got the four Marnie and three Judge.
Yeah, so heavy on the disruption, which we kind of saw lists gravitating towards. I think pretty straightforward. Like, they were starting to gravitate towards the heavy disruption supporter cards, which I think you need for the Lost Box matchup. Because if they get to just like stabilize an attacker that can get through a Weezing or two, then you just kind of end up in trouble. You really need your Weezings to pull a lot away in the early game against Lost Box. And then even, I guess, as well against Lugia. And Lugia's going to be sitting there using that. While they're sitting there only taking 40 damage in between turns, they're going to be sitting there and using the whatever the first attack of Lugia is, Read the Wind, to try and get to a Gust Effect, to get around the Weezing, to use the Summoning Star to win the game. I'm still not a big fan of this deck. I think this is definitely a player diff situation where Salazar is a good player, great player, right? U.S. national champion at one point. So this is definitely a player diff. Eternatus Weezing, I'm pretty sure, is still a terrible deck. I don't recommend playing it. But Salazar is definitely a great player. So It's not like a truly terrible deck. It just doesn't make sense to play it over like so many other decks in the format right now, I feel like. But yeah, of course, Salazar's got the skill to take it almost all the way.
It's actually the same 60 as the 32nd place list in Orlando from Isla Sutherland as well. So
okay, yeah.
Literally the same 60, which is I just see because it is down here on the Limitless page. It shows that it's like the same 60. So definitely interesting to see.
I wonder how I wonder how often you can like click on someone's random Lugia list and it just pairs up with a different Lugia list from like a different tournament because there's only so much you can do with Lugia lists, right?
Connor
so.
Fenton. Oh, he played the same 60 as someone in Knoxville. Let's see. All right, Lance Bradshaw. I don't know. I mean, there's enough like little one card differences you can make, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a good example. Travis Beckwith just literally played the same 60 that the Bradner crew played to Orlando. It's literally the same 60. And he got top 32, so it's a good run. But yeah, the E-turn getting second, definitely unexpected. Also wanted to give a little shout out to something cool that happened on the stream. We got to feature in day one, Brandon Salazar versus Michael Pramwat, a rematch of the 2014 U.S. National Championship Finals. Unfortunately for Pramwat, things did go the same way. Salazar was able to run away with it. Once again, Pram could not overcome Sally's ability lock deck two tournaments. But yeah, that's really cool. And they had not played each other in a game of Pokemon since the 2014 US Nationals. So that was actually like a super cool thing that we got to feature. We saw after round, I think they went on at 4:01. So we saw after round four that they were at the same record. And we were like, all right, this is the, we actually saw it after round three that they were the same record. We were like, all right, this is the dream pairing. If they get paired, we pull them. They didn't get paired round four. We're like, okay. Next round. They both won, stayed at the same record, and boom, sure enough, they got paired. It's like a dream. Perfect content right there.
Yeah, definitely a throwback matchup for sure.
There was one more perfect content moment we could have had. We were watching going into round nine, the winning in. Andrew Mahone and Matt Wood, LDF, were both the same record. And we were like, if they play on the winning in, that's like easy choice right there.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of Mahone, I guess we could talk about that right now. Is pretty interesting Mew deck, right? Overall. Mew V Max build. And there's another interesting list that we'll talk about as well. Xander Perot. Xander always brings something spicy to Mew. But Mahone and JW. I don't know. Oh, I think Jesse as well.
Jesse Parker, yes.
Yeah, Jesse Parker. Rocking the Flying Pikachu. You know, everyone loves the Flying Pikachu. Everyone wants to play it. But they don't want to commit to the
Trendazool.
Yeah, they don't want to commit to the Arceus build. But they all still just want to play Flying Pikachu. We've been seeing it in Lost Box lists from like Aiden. And now we see Mahone and crew bringing it in the Mew V Max deck, which I don't know if I can recommend. I do want to try this out. But when Lost Box is giving you problems, Flying Pikachu probably is your best answer, right?
Yeah. And it's not like like one Flying Pikachu by itself doesn't like do it for you, right? But like when you're throwing Flying Pikachu plus Big Parasol plus Judge plus Lost Path City. To the Peak, like plus Lost City, right? You're just throwing everything at the Lost Box all at the same time. Like, it's a lot to deal with. And that's what Andrew said. I was like kind of giving him a hard, I interviewed him after he won on stream in the winning in. And I was like kind of giving him a hard time, cause it's obviously like a little bit of like a silly choice. You wouldn't expect to see it. Right. And he's like, bro, ask me what my record against Lost Box is, man. And I think it does the job good enough, right? You've got Roxanne in there for the additional disruption if you need it. And it's like, it doesn't have to be like Pikachu wins you the game. Pikachu has to just get you far enough ahead, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think against most builds, probably still doesn't hold up great up against Kyogre Lost Box, but that's definitely not the most popular build of Lost Box anymore.
Kyogre was way on the decline, right? Yeah. I mean, especially after you guys didn't play it in OCIC, right? Like, you guys were the only ones playing it, really, it felt like.
Yeah. Now, like, the Seal Stone builds definitely kind of took over alongside Ray. So those are, like, the top two by far at the tournament. And that the Flying Pikachu definitely does work against both of those builds of Lost Box, right? So, a pretty solid choice, I think, overall. And then at the end of the day, you're just a Mew deck. Your mirror match isn't going to change much unless you're playing the Meloetta build, but all these cards in here is all you need to beat. You got the Roxanne Path combo. And then your Lugia matchup, kind of the same as well. Judge plus Path, hope they whiff, maybe Roxanne towards the late game, whatever it might be, right? So your mirror match your Lugia matchup and your Mirror match aren't changing much either, which is like the next two most popular decks. And then I also, you know, to even mention, I guess, you know, Reggie's Flying Pikachu. That's like the Reggie matchup's tough. The Reggie matchup's a tough matchup, but you get the Flying Pikachu in there. All of a sudden, your Reggie matchup's not so tough, to be honest. So, yeah, I definitely want to try it out. Seems a little gimmicky, but if it gets the job done, it gets the job done, right?
Yeah, and Flying P is, I would say, definitely a stronger counter against Reggie than it is a strong counter against Lost Box, right? Like, Reggie, unless they're teched for it, like, Reggie doesn't even always play Escape Rope. It's started to become a little bit more of a staple inclusion, just the one rope, but does one rope even win the matchup for you? I don't think so.
You need
to
rope in the boss on the same turn with a Gigas, with a Choice Belt.
And you don't even want to hit KO. Oh, with Gigas, right?
You need everything. Like, you need the whole shebang, and you're judging them. Got the Roxanne, like, and then even then, if you get it like out turn two, which is possible, Mew finds Mew's like the best deck at finding multiple one of cards throughout a game, you know,
especially
you get that turn
with Sealstone,
turn two peak swinging. Like, I got a lot of work to do, from there. The other spicy build of Mew, and this one was like really cool, especially when I heard about it, like, okay, that's really super cool. Was Xander Perot, who's always cooking with Mew, came with a Dreepy Lock. Which can be used probably in other scenarios, but the main situation you try and utilize this in is up against.
We'll talk about what the Dreepy does. What's its attack?
Okay, Dreepy does 10 damage with Infestation, and then the effect of the attack for a Psychic Energy. During your opponent's next turn, the defending one can't retreat. So you copy Dreepy's attack through Mew VMAX with the Cross Fusion Strike. You put a double turbo on it, so then Infestation is doing zero damage. So you're not KOing whatever you're trapping in the active. And then if you have Oricorio in play, if you trap something up against Lugia, like a Dunsparce or a Manaphy, or the main one that you try and force your opponent to put in play is a Pumpkaboo, because you put Path to the Peak in play, and most Lugia lists play the Pumpkaboo. All Lugia lists play the Pumpkaboo. But most only play like maybe one Vacuum besides that. Maybe they have the Irida, maybe two Vacuum, but that's hard to find. When you're getting judged path, right? It's hard to get the whole combo of get your stuff in the discard pile. So usually you're bumping Path to the Peak with Pumpkaboo, which you can kind of consistently force out of them. And then you can go UV Max, Dreepy, Guts of the Pumpkaboo, trap it in the active. And Pumpkaboo can attack. So you're doing zero damage to the Pumpkaboo, but Pumpkaboo could be hitting you for 30 damage or 20 damage, right?
20.
But you have Oricorio to protect your fusion Pokemon from taking damage. So then you just infinitely trap the what's it called in the active. And then they deck out because you have Pidgeot. The last part of the combo is the Pidgeot V, which allows you to infinitely loop it back into the deck. And you have the combination of Collapse Stadium plus Lost Vacuum to actually create bench space to make sure you can utilize everything in the combo. So really cool Dreepy Lock idea there from Xander to gain some extra win percentage against the Lugia decks. Is it better than Aerodactyl? I don't know, but it is pretty cool.
It's definitely cooler than Aerodactyl, I think.
That's for sure, yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I'd say it's obvious. I think it's arguably also a harder counter, right? It forces Lugia to play a switch card naturally, like Bird Keeper or Escape Rope.
Which a decent amount have.
But if they only have one, you can deal with that, right? You have, like, if they go like Rope plus Boss KO your Dreepy, for example, you've got Silene. You bring it back.
Well, this list doesn't have Silene.
Oh, it doesn't have the Silene. Oh, just kidding. Well, you just lose that, bro, Xander.
Well, if they Bird Keeper, they can't Boss Dreepy in the same turn.
I guess he's just expecting not many to have Escape Rope, which most don't.
Almost no one plays Escape Rope.
Yeah.
Like, some Irida builds do, but not very often.
Sure. Yeah, so can't Bird Keeper and Boss, so that's why, you know, we're vibing there. I mean, you can Bird Keeper and Amazing Shot, though, so...
Yeah, that is true. The Dreepy is probably going down if you get the Bird Keeper. Like I think it breaks the lock, but it's not the only way to win the matchup, right? If they don't have the Bird Keeper, you can win that way. You could even just buy yourself enough time to set up some other bigger play, to be honest. The biggest thing is like that's like an extra win kind of con. But if you just judge path and then they just go draw pass, like that's still a win condition as well, right? You don't have to do this Dreepy shenanigans to win the game. You can just function as a normal Mew deck, and it's just kind of like another option for you to have.
So Xander got on the stream round 6, I think, and he played up against Isaiah Cheville, who also got top 16, had a deep run at the tournament with Lugia. And we saw Isaiah knew about the Dreepy, right? Had, you know, it's one of those things, you know, we're halfway through the tournament. People talk, people hear about Infestation from Xander. People know what people are cooking. So Isaiah knew about it, and we saw him actively playing around the Dreepy by not putting Pumpkaboo in play, but because he didn't put Pumpkaboo in play, he didn't bump path and passed for the turn, right? So that's why this combo is cool, because just having it exist in your deck is forcing your opponent to play differently, which is, yeah, really neat. So like, you don't even have to be using it, but just the threat of it existing is sometimes enough.
And actually, Isaiah did play the escape rope. Isaiah did have the escape rope.
Yeah.
So it could have had the escape rope plus boss combo at some point. But yeah, really cool. Text in the
maybe
Mew
Isaiah should have benched the Punkaboo then. Maybe he should have just gone with the Punkaboo.
Yeah, just go for it at that point. It is interesting to see. Yeah, because I don't know who knows if Xander knew about the rope. So you could just like bait. It's like the reverse bait, right? You bait them into fully setting up for the Dreepy combo. They use their collapsed stadium. They start decking themselves out. And then you're just like, okay, escape rope boss, KO your Dreepy. And they're like, oh, I've gone through like a ton of resources or something. And now you're in like kind of a bad spot as Xander potentially. But it's cool to see like Mew be like the most innovated on deck, I feel like, in the current meta, right? Like there's always kind of new spicy stuff being added to Mew decks to deal with. Kind of deal with the same situations just in different ways.
Yep. As far as specific deck lists as well, one thing we definitely need to talk about is Milos, who won in Bochum, played a really interesting build of Lugia, had a Vikavolt V in the deck, and also the Zapdos from Pokemon Go. And because of that, you're playing a couple more speed lightning energies. Yeah, I don't know, Azul, what was your kind of initial reaction when you saw this? The Vikavolt V, definitely a surprise.
Definitely a surprise. It can do something. It's kind of weird. It definitely can have its moments against something like a Lost Box deck. The one thing that's kind of you don't really one hit KO any. You don't want to KO Comfies. You want to KO Crams, but otherwise you're like two hit KOing all the other attackers. So it can give you some room in that matchup. If you got the Vikavolt in there, you got the Zapdos to boost damage. It allows Raikou to do some cool stuff against Regis potentially.
Yeah.
And then like against like other Vikavolt decks, other Lugia decks, you could use Vikavolt to KO Dunsparce with the Zapdos in play. But that's like a lot of bench space. That's like the biggest thing when I look at that combo. It's like that's two Pokemon you have in play that aren't Lugia, Archeops, or Luminion. Now this list only did play the one of Luminion, which is kind of to be expected when your bench space is a little bit more limited when you're trying to use that combo. So I'm curious to see like where this was utilized the most. I mean, Zapdos can KO Lugia V, which is kind of cool. You know what? Zapdos with a choice belt actually does.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Zapdos with a choice belt actually KOs Lugia V Star.
Yeah.
I missed that actually. So yeah, it seemed like there might be enough cool situations for the Zapdos plus Vikavolt throughout a game and enough matchups to get enough value. I could definitely see it, to be honest. It doesn't feel like it's the next new hot way to play Lugia. Like, I don't think everyone's going to have Vikavolt and Zapdos in their Lugia moving forwards. I don't think it's that powerful. I think it's just kind of like a cool new way you can play the deck, kind of like the one people started adding Flying Pikachu to the deck.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. And it's like definitely something that you can catch people by surprise with, right? Like against a Lost Box, you know, maybe they prep like an Ordinary Rod on top of their deck. And then you go, or they prep a Mirage Gate on top of their deck. And then you go Marnie plus Item Lock, knock out a Cramorant. And it's like, crap, I can do nothing this turn. Pass, you know? Like, and then you get to go like boss KO Manaphy. And then it's like, dang, I don't get to do anything again. And then you go retreat, amazing shot, take two presents. Yeah. Right. So
the most value in the Lost Box matchup for sure.
Yeah. And then I think like the Zapdos plus Raikou combo against Regis seems really good. Because that's like probably a 50-50-ish matchup, right? And so that can give you maybe a couple percentage points. It might be it's just kind of cool that it also works out there because you can amazing shot to KO any of the Regis, and then if you get the Regieleki with 120 HP onto the bench, boom, you take two prizes in one turn. That gets you ahead in that prize race. Does have the Collapse Stadium, which is also really strong in that matchup because it lets you bump a damaged Lugia V-Star out of play that you attacked with early. And speaking of bench space, you mentioned, right, being a problem with this, you know, just clean it up a little bit with the Collapse.
Yeah. The Collapse is kind of cool too because you have the Skyla combo, which I think is like really good. Which actually, I think if you choose to ever play Skyla over Irida, you should almost always play the Collapse Stadium because Collapse Stadium has always been very good in Lugia and like initial lists played too. But finding it on the right turn when you need it was always kind of the problem. So that's why we saw people playing like two, even up to three sometimes. But if you have the Skyla in there, then I kind of like if you have Skyla, I think you should almost always rock the Collapse because I think the card is very powerful in quite a few matchups.
Is it more a situation of if you play Collapse, you have to play Skyla over Irida, or if it's like if you prefer Skyla over Irida, you should play Collapse, you know?
Yeah, I think that's it. I would never play Collapse to force myself to play Skyla. You just shouldn't play Collapse at that point if you want to go with neither. It would just be play Skyla. Oh, I'm playing Skyla. You should also probably include the Collapse because it is a very powerful card But finding it is kind of the issue. But when you can go like Luminion for Skyla, like especially like against a Lost Box deck, when you can go like Luminion for Skyla, collapse away a damaged Pokemon, and then attack with Luminion, shuffle Luminion back to your deck, and then you just like clear your board of like liabilities completely. That's like a pretty powerful play to pull off. Or even in Mirror Match, you can do the same thing as well. So yeah, I really like the collapse inclusion alongside the Skyla in this build. But I've seen some lists with, like I said, with Skyla, but without collapse, which I'm not a big fan of. Here's another deck we could mention that kind of tied into one of our predictions was, where do we think Arceus Duraludon, or the highest Arceus Duraludon? And there was three in total in the top eight. And the highest placing one was a top four at Bauckham. Grant Chang got top eight over at Knoxville.
Yeah, I predicted there'd be one in top eight. You said top 16, so obviously I'm getting the points there. And yeah, I mean, we said this, like you mentioned a little bit ago. We thought that the Duraludon was maybe a little bit better than the Goodra right now. Goodra did have a better finish. It got second place. Yep. But there was more Duraludon in cut across the two events. So it does feel like the meta is still just a little bit more suited for the Duraludon right now.
Yeah, Guja still doesn't feel... Yeah, I know it got second. We even saw Safon get second with a little while ago. But I still feel like, yeah, the deck is still just not good enough. Again, the Lugia matchup is still just too tough, I think. And even on top of that, your Mew matchup is like slightly unfavored as well, I think. I think that one's pretty close to 50-50, though. I think it's slightly unfavored. But I don't think Mew's in a great spot either, to be honest, right now. So Lost Box is so popular right now. Most builds of Lost Box are favored against Mew. Kind of does depend a little bit. But yeah, definitely still a fan of the Arcdura over the Goo, despite it getting second. It's cool to see decks like that still kind of, I'm not going to say thrive, but, you know, contend. It's so cool to see the Goodras contending, despite it having, you know, slightly unfavorable against the top deck in the format. When you do have such a strong matchup against the Lost Box decks, you know, there is some validity to, you know, potentially still running it overall. So cool to see it up there. As far as other top eight decks go, there's a couple of Regis. So Sen... Is the first Reggie ever in top eight of a European region?
It might be. European players do not love the Reggies for some reason. But yeah, Sen got top eight with it. We saw Rahul Reddy in the top four, back-to-back top fours, by the way, and back-to-back top eights for Grant Shin as well. So shout-outs to those guys making the runs from OCIC. No sleep, you know, very jet-lagged, I'm sure, coming back and then just running into Knoxville and having back-to-back performances. Grant Shin... We do, I guess, have to mention, switched off the Lugia onto the Duraludon staying true to his tweet where he said top eight. He like after OCIC, he tweeted top eight with Lugia, Arcdura better. Arcdura didn't do better for him, though. I mean, he still got top eight, so maybe they're about the same. Who knows?
Yeah, I talked to Grant at OCIC and he's saying playing Lugia feels terrible. It feels like the bot deck that it is. I guess to close out, looking at the rest of the decks from the top eight of Knoxville, we had Piper with the Palkia Articuno. Nothing really too crazy. Had the Cape and the Crab that we saw Ian playing at Orlando. It might even be the exact same list that Ian played at Orlando. It's very close, if not the exact same 60. So Piper, another top eight. Two wins in a top eight this season. That's pretty good. There was Nick Moffitt in top four again with the Lost. Ray was in top four of Orlando. So Nick looking for that dub still. Had a very good season so far. Yeah. Pretty solid end of last season as well. And pretty much the exact same 60. No SU, no Wash Energy this time for Nick. So a little bit more consistency, I think, overall just on Ray plus the Raikou strategy.
Still had the overall double very straightforward.
Yeah, still the double Manaphy. Really good mirror. Good against Canceling Clone as well. Canceling Clone probably not too much on anyone's radar to really tech for, but it is double Manaphy is very good in mirror. It is also pretty good against Lugia decks in general because of the Raikou, right? You want to get Manaphy out aggressively, and sometimes they even try and chase it early with the Stoutland to go for like back-to-back double prize guard turn Stoutland into the Raikou. So
it won him a game against Piper as well in top eight. I think it was game one. I was watching it play out because he had the one Manaphy in play. Piper used Star Portal, put two energy onto a Greninja, one energy onto a Palkia, attached return, boss, Lost City, KO'd the Manaphy, sent it to the Lost Zone, and Nick benched the second Manaphy.
That's gonna
and
be
then
so
there were
annoying.
Two energy on Piper's Greninja for the rest of the game.
It's useless at that point.
Yeah, I think she did actually like knock out Sableye with it at some point because it's like, I just should use this, I guess. It's powered
up. Yeah, like it's got two energy on you, may as well attack with it.
But that was an interesting one to play out. Yeah, Nick's got like, I think like four top fours. He's not made a finals appearance yet. So he has not broken through to the finals. He'll probably get there though at some point. I would expect to see that.
You'd have to imagine.
But yeah, other predictions we had. Other deck besides Lugia with the most top eight placements. I predicted Lost Box. You predicted Mew. We were both wrong. It was Arceus Duraludon.
Yeah.
But there was no Mew. One Lost Box.
There was
box.
No Mew, which is actually, that's kind of a surprise, I feel like. Yeah. No Mew at all, especially with so many good players coming up with the spicy new techs. Like, where are the Mew top eights? I thought Xander was going to make it for sure. Had the spice. Really good player. Did not pull through, though.
I haven't talked to Xander yet. I don't know what happened to him at the end of his tournament. So I'm curious.
Just open GP pass one too many times.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. And then the other prediction we had was, does Control make top eight at either event? I said no. You said yes. And once again, Azul stays taking L's.
But Sander's deck was really, really cool. I don't think Xander made day two. It was like a Dream Ball.
I haven't even seen this.
There was a Regigigas V-Star.
Oh, how have I not seen this?
You're not looking.
I'm lacking, bro.
Yeah. So really interesting looking deck. I don't know how good it was.
You didn't tweet about it.
Oh, maybe it's that good. Maybe it's
That's why I didn't see it. Was he on the stream?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was on stream at some point.
I haven't watched the stream back yet.
The last thing I want to mention about Knoxville, Szymanski top eight with the Vikavolt going back to an Aerodactyl build over the Path build that had seemed to be the more popular of the two builds. So back to the Dactyl for the dominant Vikavolt deck, I guess. Like the highest placing Vikavolt in Bakum was a Reggie VMAX build, I think. So I don't think I would go there. So, but yeah, Aerodactyl versus not Aerodactyl going into Perth. What do you think was the better way to go right now, Chip?
Yeah, maybe Dactyl is better. I liked the paths a little bit more for a while for the Lost Box matchup, to be honest, just because it gives you that additional option. I mean, that matchup is like good enough for you anyway, but the reason the matchup is so good is because, you know, you're giving them way limited options. And if you're shutting down Radiant Greninja in addition to locking a Comfey active, like that's really good. So I like the paths for that reason, but with Lost Box, like just not doing as well. Yeah. Maybe Dactyl. I mean, Dactyl is definitely more consistent against Lugia than the path, right? Because they can just bump the path. They can't bump Aerodactyl. Like Aerodactyl's just there.
Hard to bump the path though. They put like Lost Box, they play one stadium. So it's still hard to.
No. I mean, Lugia, it's easy for
Lugia. Oh, Lugia. Okay. Yeah. Lugia bumped the path. Oh, okay. Okay. It's
I was still talking hard to about get, both matchups kind of at the same time.
Yeah, it's hard to get them there. So, yeah, it's definitely Dactyl, I think. I don't know if it does. We were actually testing a lot of Vikavolt leading into the tournament. And the Pathworld build was doing pretty solid against Lugia. But Dactyl has to probably give you a higher win percentage. It probably just does, right? Because even when you go second, if Lugia just has a slow turn one and you get off of turn one, Paralyzing Bolt, you're usually in like a fine situation. And even then, I think you still go for the next turn Dactyl. On the turn following that, you probably usually still go for Aerodactyl most of the time, because most of the time the Lugia player has to kind of build up into the Summoning Star still. When you get the turn two item lock on them, they have to go find the Summoning Star combo still. They have to sit there and read the win for a turn or something, or like play back-to-back draw supporters to get there. So the Dactyl maybe just is still the way. It was the way to go this weekend. It was the only Vikavolt in top eight of both tournaments. Maybe still the way.
So we do have Perth regionals this weekend. I don't know if there's going to be like a grassroots stream or anything like that. I haven't heard anything about it yet.
Yeah, me either.
But going into the tournament, do you have any thoughts on, I mean, do you expect to see anything unique from the meta? It'll be a smaller tournament, right? And, you know, Australia did grace us with the decks such as Frostmoth and Flaffy Toolbox in the past. And of course, Radiant Jirachi Regigigas as well. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think there's any chance for something cool to win down in Perth? Or is one of the good players going to show up and just beat the tournament with Lugia?
I'm going to call it. I think Arcdura is going to win.
Arcdura, let's go.
Grand Chen's going to make a last minute trip. Just like he did to OCIC over to Perth Regionals and draw with Arcdura. No, but yeah, I'm just going to predict that I get Arcdura. I think Arcdura. I'm gonna go ahead and predict Arcdura to win. But yeah, Lugia will probably still be 30%. Lost Box will be 20%. And then from there, I guess Mew will still be around that 12. And then from there, who knows, to be honest. And I could even see, I think the smaller tournaments are a little bit more of an outlier in terms of trying to call the meta. And then also, you don't want to take too much away from their results as well. Like, no disrespect to the Australian players, but it's just like, you know, when you go into a 1,000-person tournament versus a 100-person tournament,
of course,
we'll even see if they get 100 people, I'm going to predict at least they get at least 100 people, though, at Perth Regionals. Yeah, I looked at the numbers as well. They're small. They're definitely small. But the game has grown.
Yeah, but the one in 2022 was 85 players, you know? So
yeah. I wonder where it is that it's so hard for them to get to it. That has
it's
to just, be like
it's on the west coast of Australia. Oh. It's literally like if you think like New York to LA, that's like the distance between, and like the majority of the population is on the east coast where Sydney and Melbourne are.
They're pretty stressed for points right now, though. I wonder if more people will kind of make the trip to try and
But there's that affects like how many people, you know?
Yeah.
Not that many. But yeah. I guess little geography lesson with Uncommon Energy here. We got the map of Australia pulled up. Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne's in here somewhere, I think. Wait, where's Melbourne? Oh, it's south. Okay, Melbourne's south. I thought it was north for some reason. And then Perth all the way.
Oh my gosh.
It's like
there's nothing in between them either.
Yeah, that's where all the like killer spiders and stuff live is in this
can
area.
You even drive could you even drive there?
I mean,
I don't even see like is there a main highway?
Yeah,
I guess
there's a highway right here.
Oh okay, I didn't see it.
I mean, but that's like you're not gonna drive from New York to LA, bro. That's like
is that
3 days
the distance?
Yeah
okay, yeah,
it's literally Sydney directions driving to Perth. We're doing this now, we're committed.
What is the time?
Distance driving 41 hours.
Gosh. Make a road trip out of it.
900 kilometers. Azul's trying to get a road trip. Azul's trying to get the Australians to.
Nah, we're flying to Perth. Oh, I think it is expensive to travel there as well. So like even just like that.
Yeah, it's expensive to travel to Australia and it's expensive to travel within Australia.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. I'm gonna predict over 100 players though. They can do it. And then, yeah, I think the meta percentage will be about the same. I can't imagine that they're much different, right? Like, but yeah, I could see Lugia being like 50% of the tournament as well, to be honest. That wouldn't shock me, but I also wouldn't read into it too much.
Sure. All right. Well, we can talk about some exciting news that happened today. The Pokemon Presents was today. They talked about some news for a bunch of different Pokemon properties. Pokemon Go, Pokemon Scarlet Violet, new DLC announced. Pokemon Sleep as well, which everyone hyped for, but like, I mean, it's like fine. It just seems like it's a sleep tracking app with a Pokemon skin. You know, it's fine. You have to download it as well. We'll test Pokemon Sleep on the Uncommon Energy podcast.
But what does it do?
It tracks your sleep.
How does it track your sleep? Do you like wear a thing?
You have to like push when you're going to sleep and then. And then there's like a product called the Pokemon Go Plus, which you can connect to Pokemon Sleep and to Pokemon Go, and you push the button on the Pokemon Go Plus.
Is it like a fitness app overall? Like,
by the way, first off, Pokemon Go Plus, terrible name for a product.
What's the first? Where's the first Plus product? Is there a Pokemon Go Plus?
Yes, there is.
Oh, that it already exists?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But it's
when you get a plus next. Like,
yeah, who knows? I saw this. It just, I don't know. This is a little off topic, but I saw this like post one time about Sony needs to go give like a massive raise or nest egg or something to whoever decided to name the PlayStation 2 the PlayStation 2, because they just set them up for success in the future. We've had PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, and then we look at Xbox and it's Xbox 360, Xbox One, but then is the Xbox One the same as the first Xbox? No, those are two different things. Then we've got the Xbox Series S, the Series X. Nobody knows which Xbox is which Xbox. Pokemon Go Plus.
2 million years from now, they're going to look back on the history of this, and the timeline's going to be screwed up because of the Xboxes. They're not going to know where they are in time when they come back in time.
My favorite thing from that was I remember there was like a Black Friday, or maybe it was like before Christmas one year. One of the first years, I don't even know which Xbox is like the current generation Xbox, but I just remember
Xbox One, right?
No, it's like the Xbox Series. It's the Series S or the Series X. It's one of those. I don't know which one, and you don't either, apparently. Like, I just remember on Amazon. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I just remember on Amazon, whichever one was the last generation console was the highest selling thing in video games because everyone thought they were getting the new Xbox, but they were getting the old Xbox.
Yeah, they should, yeah, just make, keep it simple. PlayStation did it right. And they also have the better games on PlayStation, to be honest. Like, Xbox fell off hard. Like, better names, better games. Like,
Xbox has Halo, and they are clinging on to that.
That's not, it's not even a game. It's not even a good game.
Yeah. And it's on PC as well now, so.
Yeah. They should honestly just scrap it.
But so, anyways, bringing it back around to Pokemon. The Pokemon Presents today. There was a little bit of news regarding the TCG and also Play Pokemon, the main one being the reveal of the World Championship dates. We knew it was going to be in Yokohama, Japan. We didn't know exactly when, though. It's going to be August 11th through the 13th at the Pacifico, which is like a big concert hall or something like that, I think. Big convention center. And they also revealed the world's artwork, which I have to say, super cute, super endearing. Pikachu with a bowl of ramen. Definitely a fan.
Yeah, I say this is funny. Someone in the Pokemon community who I know, they tweeted a while ago looking at booking their flight for Japan, and they were like, well, I can't mess up if I go for over for half the month, and they booked a flight from the 15th to the end of the month. And they picked the wrong half of August to book the flight for, so I thought that was a funny, unfortunate scenario. But yeah, I mean, the dates, we knew it was going to be in August. The dates are here. I think me and Chip were talking about this before the cast. Chip is saying it's a big deal that they are, you know, announced worlds on the Pokemon Presents. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like that's just something that they should just do.
I mean, but it is something they should do, but it's a big deal that they are doing it, right? The fact that they're talking about Play Pokemon on these Pokemon Presents, which are used to announce their big projects. It's announcing the DLC for the video game, like these things that they're, you know, planning to sell millions of units of, right? And they're right alongside that talking about like competing in Pokemon events. I think that's really cool. And I think
it's cool.
I would love to see it eventually lead into like Pokemon Presents promotes playing Pokemon at your local store or something like that, or even competing at a regional or international championship. Who knows if we'll see that happen. It's kind of weird too, because it's like the Play Pokemon stuff, like the announcements for things like Pokemon Sleep and then like the new Pokemon Concierge, like this little show or whatever that's coming out on Netflix. All of these things and Pokemon Masters, these are all things that are done by the Pokemon Company, as far as I understand it.
Yeah.
Like the Pokemon Company, not the Pokemon Company International. And Play Pokemon and the World Championships is something done by the Pokemon Company International, right? Which is in Seattle and London. So the fact that like they're kind of wrapped into the Pokemon Presents now and is not something that they have done before the one that was this last summer. They talked about London Worlds, the one this last summer. Chris Brown, who's like the broadcast executive. I don't know his exact job title, but he's like the top of the food chain when it comes to the live streaming and like the Play Pokemon stuff. The guy who's been featured in it and stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah. Saying that it's like cool that they're doing, I think he's giving him way too much credit. Like that's their partner company that throws the World Championships in their games. Like it should just like be a, I think we should never give Pokemon too much credit. You know, hold them to a higher standard of something that they should already, you know, be doing. But yeah, we got the dates. They announced it in the Pokemon Presents. It'd be cool if they announced more TCG stuff in the Pokemon Presents, but as always with Pokemon and TPCI, baby steps.
Always. We'll see.
The other like TCG thing is this throwback product. Right? That's kind of what we're Pokemon, what do they call it? Pokemon Trading Card Game Classic, I think is the name of it.
Yep. Yeah, so this looks like a, it almost looks like a high-end, like, exquisite product is, like, what they're going for here. Like, the video they put out for it is, like, these two people dressed up in fancy clothes. They're walking in with this briefcase of cards. They're sitting all proper in this, like, parlor room, unfolding the case, pulling out the decks, and playing a game of the Pokemon TCG with these really unique damage counters and stuff, by the way, as well. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm a fan of them doing stuff like this. It's been a little bit of a interesting topic. I saw some people complaining about, like, you know, it's like a there's just like a very, it's a very niche audience that this product is meant for. It is a super premium product for their most diehard and most like premium of Pokemon fans, right?
I don't know if it's that. This is like, the thing's gonna sell out instantly. Like, you say niche, but like every collector in the world wants as many of these as they can possibly get.
But that's like what it's meant for, right? It's, yeah. This is not gonna be mass produced and sold in like Target and Walmart. Sure, it's gonna sell out.
Yeah.
But the person it's meant for is like, I mean, the people who, like, if you think of the percentage of Pokemon card sales, if you look at the Pokemon Center, like, it's, you know, probably, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, probably less than 10%.
Yeah.
Like, if you compare it to, like, Target and Walmart. And yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's definitely meant for, even though, like, it's a big deal to the people who are ingrained in the Pokemon community and like the big collector base, like people will go after it, people are gonna want it, it's gonna sell out, but it is not meant for the wider, you know, public. It is meant for the more niche collector slash player base.
Yeah, and I think the coolest thing, for me of it, like, yeah, like, this is something that I will definitely would want to pick one up. I'm not like too, this kind of stuff doesn't intrigue me ever too much. It's definitely something I'd probably want to pick up if I can. You know, it's gonna be hard to get these things for sure, which is like maybe the biggest thing that sucks, right? It's like, it's gonna be hard to get one of these, I think, for sure. But yeah, the stackable damage counters, I think, are the coolest thing to kind of, you said you think they seem a little tedious. I think they would still be pretty manageable. I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, but I feel like having this a stack to move with your Pokemon when you like move it to the bench or whatever, that might be a little bit easier than trying to move five dice or whatever. But I don't know, it'll be interesting. I definitely like, I want to try them out and see how they feel.
Yeah, and so this is meant to be its own little format, right? These three decks played against one another, featuring the three original Kanto starters. The cards from these decks are not legal for tournament play. Obviously, many of these are like old cards, but there are some like interesting reprints, and there are some new cards as well over on PokeBeach. They the Japanese website, by the way, released way more information about these than the English website did. But we see there's a Lugia EX, a Suicune EX, and a Ho-Oh EX added to these decks. But these are not going to be legal cards. These will not be legal for tournament play.
Yeah,
it's just meant. These are all cards that are meant to exist in this own little three deck format.
I wonder if it'll be very competitive at all, which is what I'm kind of curious about. Is it just going to kind of be like theme decks, and one of them is just going to be broken, and the other two kind of suck? Hopefully, hopefully the product that is being put together here, though, the decks are like reasonably competitive against each other and can kind of be its own kind of little game. I mean, I don't think too many people are going to be playing with this thing. Like I said, it's going to be definitely much.
Oh, I'm playing with it 100%, bro.
If you can get one,
yeah,
that's going to be the problem.
Yeah.
But I think the coolest thing to me is like the damage, and I kind of hope like maybe moving forward, like for Worlds this year, like the dice or whatever, maybe they go with the stacking dice route, and instead of having actual dice, they give you these.
I do think that the little wheel thing to roll a coin, like. That's kind of dumb.
You know what they could have done?
Of flipping a coin, instead of rolling a dice, they literally want you to spin a ball on this roulette wheel.
And you're like, what do you want? Do you want half white circles or no half white circles? Instead of calling heads or tails.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine playing a deck like Ambipom Pokemon Go or something like that. And this is your randomizer.
You just keep rolling it.
I wonder if this randomizer will be legal for tournament play. Like, is this a legal randomizer? Probably.
I hate how they still let people use coins. I hate how they let people use coins still. They need to stop that. It would have been funny if instead of that, you know, those board games where they, I forget what board game it was. I think multiple board games where it has like that plastic dome you push and there's a die in it that pops up and it rolls a die for you. Yeah. What if they had one of those in the middle there instead? I know there's like a bunch of different games. There's a bunch of different games that have had them.
Like Sorry, maybe.
No, not Sorry. Because Sorry, you draw cards, don't you? Was it Sorry?
Trouble.
Okay, yeah, that's one of them. You press it and then it rolls the die for you in the little thing. They could have had one of those instead. Of course, that's not very classy, and we're going for a classy high end look here, but.
I'm definitely, if I'm playing this, I'm going to be wearing a suit or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to talk to the live stream people. Maybe we get this for like our between round content.
There you go. Ooh. That'd be sick.
Because we're already wearing our suits and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why, but when I saw the video for it, it gave me like Casino Royale vibes for some. For
it does
some
have that James a little Bond. Bit, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
It was just like, I was like, oh, okay. That's what I thought of when I saw the video. But yeah, a cool product. It is kind of a shame that the only thing that they always ever talk about for the TCG on the presents thing is either the World Championships, which makes sense, is a huge event for them. And I think the World Championships for the Pokemon TCG, they're definitely trying to turn into more of an event where they want as many people to come as possible and less of just a competition, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that they're trying to make as big of a deal out of it as possible. And it's going to be in Japan. It's going to be probably the biggest worlds ever in terms of what they do there. And then hopefully that carries on to future worlds, of course. But yeah, the only thing that they ever talk about besides that about the Pokemon TCG is something they're trying to sell and nothing to do with the competition still, really, I feel like. But
I will say it is a little annoying to look at the Japanese cards next to the English cards in the scans.
I kind of like the more classic look, to be honest.
I don't know, man. You're These a fan Japanese of the bling. Cards look, I mean, that's pretty sweet.
I'm not as big of a bling fan, though. I kind of like the simplicity, to be honest.
It's also interesting, too, because, like, so we've got some, like, you know, base set trainers. It is interesting as well because this is the first time that Professor Oak has ever been printed as a supporter card. So I saw the Unlimited people freaking out about this. Like, does this affect the Unlimited print of Professor Oak? It's the first time it's ever been printed as a supporter. So that is kind of interesting. And then
is computer search an ace there's, spec?
Yeah, computer. I don't think so. But I only see it in Japanese, so I don't know for sure. But I don't think so. It just says, I think this is just item card.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of interesting because it's like there's some new cards. There's base set cards. And then we see Rocket's Admin is in here. So it almost makes me think that these decks are going to include a variety from over the years.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of interesting if it had like an unlimited format feel to it, right? Maybe you got like some all-stars of each of these types from over the years. But I don't know how they would balance it necessarily.
There's a Pikachu in one of the decks, I think. In the Charizard deck. It's right here as well.
Of course it's in the Charizard deck, right?
You got to count on water somehow.
Yeah, true, true.
30 damage. He's going to get that Squirtle.
<He's weak. laughs> I wonder if this will be fun to play or not.
That's what I hope for. I don't know if it will. How balanced is it actually going to be? Hopefully it is, but we'll have to wait and see what the decks actually end up containing.
Yeah, definitely cool. Yeah, looking forward to it, and we'll see what comes of it. But for now, let's move on to everyone's favorite segment of the podcast, Guess That Flavor Text, where each week Azul or I will pick a card, read it out, and have the other person try to guess what Pokemon that card is. You get three lifelines to utilize: what set the card is from, what stage the card is, and read an attack name. You get 4 points if you don't use any lifelines, and you lose a point for each lifeline that you use. Azul is ahead 2 points on me right now, and he's got a chance to get a little farther ahead, so had to give him one. I gotta say, I don't think you're getting it, but we'll see what you can do. Maybe you'll surprise me. Are you ready, Azul?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Although it's tough, it can't handle cold well. When night falls, it buries itself in leafage and sleeps.
Go again.
Although it's tough, it can't handle cold well. When night falls, it buries itself in leafage and sleeps.
Okay, so buries itself in leafage and sleeps is kind of all I have to work with. It doesn't handle cold well, even though it's tough. So it makes me think it's like some kind of like fighting or ground Pokemon. Not like I wouldn't say it's like, it's probably not something like a Geodude. So I'm kind of thinking in terms of something like Pignite, maybe. I think like a tough Pokemon. Definitely not like tough Pokemon. Machamp, Machoke. I don't think they're burying themselves in leaves at night, but something in that kind of realm. I'm gonna need some more to work with here. So let's go with what set the card is from.
It is from, I'm surprised you're starting with this one, because this is the one you say helps you the least.
I feel like it'll help me the most in this one. Like, I need some direction to go with.
It's from Evolving Skies.
Evolving Skies. What is Evolving Skies? Evolving Skies is what? Leafeon V Star or Leafeon V Max? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I can't think about anything in Evolving Skies.
Rayquaza and I VMAX.
What was that?
Rayquaza V Max. Jolteon V Max.
I don't think so. I don't think it's any of the evolution Pokemon. What? I don't even know what else is in the set. All right, give me the stage. I'm gonna have to go through all of these for sure. I don't even know if I'm gonna be even close.
It is a basic.
Basic, tough Pokemon. Give me an attack name.
Seismic Toss.
Seismic Toss. Let's lock in. I think there might actually be a Machamp in the set, so I'm just going to go with Machop.
It is not Machop, Azul. unfortunate. I'll read the ability name because it might give some people who play along at home a chance, and you'll maybe give you one more guess. But if you get it right at home off the ability name, doesn't count. You still got 0 points. The ability is Vice Coach.
Oh, is it Vice Heracross?
Close. It is Pinsir.
Oh yeah, I was never getting I was getting close. I was thinking like some kind of grass Pokemon that's kind of like buff, but I was like, I couldn't come up with any grass Pokemon because like full like leaves, so it's like in the forest or something.
Yeah.
I couldn't come up with any like buff grass Pokemon. Okay.
Listen,
yeah,
man, I'm behind. I had to give you a hard one, you know?
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, I would honestly be surprised if anyone got this one correct. So if you got it correct without the Vice Coach, let us know down in the comments below, because this was
I didn't even know this card existed. Yeah.
This was an intentionally difficult one.
It's like actually a Pokemon that could, like, depending on like, you know, depending on matches for single strike decks, could actually be good.
Yeah. Like a not less than relevant ability. The thing is, like, Yeah,
I'm gonna have to pre-order two Pinsir just in case I ever need to play in my single strike deck. That's actually like not a
single
bad
strike
card.
Lugia deck.
Hey, come rotation. And speaking of rotation, there was a third tournament this weekend, another 3,000 person tournament in Japan. I think there was at least around 4,000. I thought I saw somewhere on Twitter that there was 5,000 competitors total for all games, all tournaments and divisions being played. I don't know if they have divisions in Japan, but I saw somewhere that I thought I saw 5K total competitors, because they not only had a standard post-rotation tournament, which we're coming up on finally, with 3,140 players, but they also had an expanded tournament. We'll talk a little bit about that afterwards. But yeah, a rotation tournament in Japan, 3,140 players. Lost Box won, but the meta doesn't look very... the meta looks kind of meh.
Yeah, so we've got Lost Box winning, we've got Radiant Gardevoir in second, another Lost Box, and a Mew in top four, and the top eight's rounded out by a couple of Lugia, a Gardevoir, and then another Lost Box. So yeah, I mean, it's like a four deck meta right now, it seems.
Yeah,
in the top 16, those are the only four decks that we have so far. And maybe the more surprising one is the Lugia, right? Lugia obviously loses a ton to rotation. But I've seen people talking about this on Twitter the last couple of weeks a little bit. You know, people are kind of trying to test their post-rotation already. But it seems like the way that people are going with Lugia after we lose Aurora Energy, after we lose all the amazing rare Pokemon, is they're going with the single strike package. Do you have any thoughts on this, Azul?
We saw some people talking about it, you know, when Lugia came out initially. Of course, it was kind of like not as powerful as what we currently are rocking with Lugia. But, I mean, it seems decent, right? Like, I don't see why it'd be bad.
Why does this deck play a Radiant Serena?
I guess for Sableye, probably, right? Against Lost Box. Maybe just heal up.
Yeah.
A little bit of damage. If you're getting 2-hit KO'd, maybe there's like a pretty consistent number that comes up where you want to be able to heal.
You can 2-hit KO the Radiant Serena with a Sableye pretty easily,
yeah,
right?
Damage. Yeah, I feel like Greninja could be good in there. You have like the urns, so you can like recover energy that you Greninja'd away potentially. So it just seems like it could be pretty cool in there. Look at the other build of Lugia that was in top 16. Pretty similar. No Radiant Pokemon in this one, though. Before Capture, did the other one have Capture and Aroma?
It did.
I have a list
for
the other top eight one.
The one top eight that we have the list for did have Capture and Aroma, four of them.
Yeah. So, I guess we lose Evolution Incense. So you kind of have to.
Yep.
And Quick Ball.
Yep. Order your Capturing Aromas, people.
what's it called?
We've got Zinnia's Liam resolve was right, the whole, as a supporter Liam was... as well, right? Which is like kind of crazy. 4-4 Lugia V-Star also. So, I mean, to me, it almost feels like this is meant to be like maybe a Lugia V-Star deck. Like you're focused on attacking with Lugia V-Star, and then it's like Tyranitar just comes in and cleans up for you, right?
Yeah, it's like you're a heavy hitter, right? Because also Gardevoir's weak to dark. So like your Lugia is not matching up against Gardevoir very well, probably. So you need... Yeah, so it's like Lugia's just your early attacker. You're just using Lugia, and then it's like, oh, something big popped up that I need one KO. Okay, go T-Tar, right?
Yeah.
Using one, maybe two T-Tars throughout a game. But if not, you're swinging with Lugia for the majority of the game, right? And then cleaning up when you can. And there's like this two Stone Journers in there as well, which I have to imagine is like mostly for probably the Lost Box matchup, just to have a one prize attacker. But Lost Box
and
didn't
Gardevoir,
win.
Gardevoir as well, because Gardevoir, you know, uses the stage two Gardevoir as one of its main attackers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Lost Box ended up winning. And it's like nothing too crazy, right? It's a Mirage Gate build. Going back to Clara's because Ordinary Rod is rotated. Sky Seal Sun Mirage Gate though. This almost looks like Pedro's list from OCIC.
It does.
With rotation cards, right?
And it's got the new stadium in here. This is like the Sky Arrow Bridge, right? Where it's like it gives all your basic Pokemon free retreat. There's no air balloon anymore, so seems like a decent stadium. You could still play Pokestop, but this version of the deck plays a lot of supporters, so probably feels pretty bad to use Pokestop here. So yeah, that makes a stadium that makes sense.
And if stadium cards aren't too popular in general, then you can kind of dominate the stadium space. Like the Lugia decks were playing Lugia decks play. What is this stadium? Oh, I can't just once during each player's turn, that player may flip a coin and head search their deck for a Pokemon card and put it in their hand. So that's our so Lugia players are flipping coins to find their Pokemon now. Four Aroma and two of the stadium that like flips a coin search for it. Yeah. Yeah, both lists had that four Aroma and two of that stadium.
As it goes.
Yeah. But it looks like usual suspects so far, right? There's two other lists in the top 16 that we don't know what they were. But Mew, Lost Box, and Gardevoir was the predicted best card coming out of the Scarlet and Violet, right? So that's not a huge surprise. And Lugia. So what did we really lose? Who fell off? Did anyone fall off?
I think Maridon Regieleki was expected to be really good, right? We don't see any of that here.
No Regis either. I think that's like another deck that like theoretically was gonna be.
Do they have that special energy yet though?
You can do it without it though. Like you could make a list with like.
I mean, you could, but that's...
I don't think it can stand up to Gar. I don't know if Reggie can deal.
There's
with
no ordinary though. Rod, bro. There's no ordinary rod.
Oh yeah, how do you do anything? Actually, I didn't even think about that. There's no rod.
There's that new supporter that lets you put back. I think this played it. Yeah, Miriam. Choose up to 5 Pokemon cards from your discard pile and shuffle them into your deck, then draw 3 cards. Like that's honestly a card that's like not bad in Reggie's, right? theoretically,
That's okay.
But if that's your best recovery option, that or Clara, like you're not playing research.
Yeah. Also, I guess one thing that's like a big surprise, there's no Giratina. Am I tripping or is that like the best predicted to be the best deck in the format?
Yeah. I think Giratina, Gardevoir and the Maridon deck all seem like the most hyped up ones. And we don't see two of those. There is 4 Mew though, which I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before the cast. Mew just seems like super good, right?
Hexer tweeted out a tier list from a little bit ago that had Giratina as tier S, and then Lost Box, Mew, Maridon, Lugia tier A, and then Gardevoir, Urshifu tier B. I don't know if this is Hexer's personal tier list or if this was in a reply to something. No, I think it's his Hexer's tier list.
Yeah, I think his tier list.
Aiding us.
There's no Oinkalone as well. I think that card's like not bad either.
Yeah, where's the Oinkalone in the tier list? What the heck? Makes no sense. Yeah, fraudulent tier list from Hexer. From the results I had seen, I thought Tina was like the deck. And it doesn't seem like anything in any of these decks counters Tina, right? Like what in these decks counters Tina? I guess V-Guard energy on Lugia. Yeah, V-Guard energy on Lugia, I guess, is pretty annoying because you're not going to get to 10 super early on. So that could be tough to deal with, but yeah. We'll see how it develops more. I mean, it's only the first tournament, right? First major tournament.
Let's talk about the Gardevoir a little bit because that's obviously the new deck. That's the thing that, you know, we don't know much about just yet. For anyone who doesn't know, Gardevoir EX, the new stage 2 Pokemon from Scarlet Violet, Its ability allows you to, as often as you like during your turn, attach a basic psychic energy from your discard pile to one of your Pokemon, then put two damage counters on that Pokemon. So this deck, as its attackers, it really utilizes the other Gardevoir, the basic, or not basic, but the non-rulebox Gardevoir, I feel like, as an attacker, and a consistency option, right? Shining Arcana, yeah. Once during your turn, look at the top two cards of your deck, attach any number of basic energy cards you find there to your Pokemon in any way that you like, put the other cards into your hand. So that's draw power plus acceleration, and it has the brainwave attack, 60 plus 30 more for each psychic energy attached to this Pokemon. So you can load up a bunch of energy on it to reach for big KOs. It's also got the Zacian V from Celebrations and Sky Sealstone as an option. Zacian V allowing you to deal same attack as the Gardevoir, 60 damage plus 30 more for each psychic energy attached to this Pokemon. It's got Cresselia in here as well. Move two damage counters from each of your Pokemon to one of your opponent's Pokemon. So that's kind of like a cool little tech, right? I haven't even thought of this card yet.
That's actually kind of... So what could you even do? You could like put one energy on each of your Pokemon. And
is
then...
that even good though?
Is it just for Sableye? Maybe it's just a Sableye counter more so than anything, right?
Yeah.
Like healing. Because like we saw the Radiant. Also, I didn't even realize this. Yeah, like with Gardevoir X seems broken. I forgot that it has Greninja to work with it still until I looked at this list. I was like, oh, wait. Yeah, you still have Greninja. Like you get your energy in your discard pile. Yeah, get your energy in your discard pile. Draw two cards. Put all your energy in play. And that has also two Emergency Jelly, which I guess like you could load up your Gardevoir, the non-EX. You could put like seven energy on your Gardevoir, attach Emergency Jelly, one hit KO, and then you heal flat back to full, so they can't just like cheese KO your Gardevoir. But I also imagine the jellies are probably for like the Lost Box matchup as well.
Gardevoir has 140, by the way, so you can't put seven energy on it.
We'll put six on it then.
And then you're not we'll put a lot on it though.
What was that?
Then you're not one hit KOing anything.
Well,
right?
Attach for turn. Maybe we get one off the shiny Arcana. We're getting there, all right? We're getting there.
Yeah, sure.
We'll get there. Also, the Zacian V for, I guess, early Excel, but then also hits pretty hard, right? Was it 60 plus, what, 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is attached to this Pokemon. I guess because it has the 220 HP, so it's kind of the same thing, but you can also, now you can overload it plus jelly it.
And you combo it with the Sky Seal Stone.
Oh, yeah, it does get the Sky Seal Stone. So that's actually the main reason you play it, isn't it? For sure.
Yeah, because this deck does not have a GX attack, or V-Star power, I should say.
Yeah.
GX attack.
Does not have a Mew and Lugia in that extra prize card.
Yeah
you've seen so many cards in this deck as well. That. Yeah, the lack of Drapion, definitely interesting. I mean, you don't need it, I guess, maybe, but it does seem like it would be pretty good, right?
The other top eight list also did not play it. It was pretty similar. It had the Gallade in there. And the one that got second place, this one also has Emergency Jelly in here, too. It also has Agatha as a supporter to remove some damage counters. Thornton, yeah, there's some wild stuff happening, man.
Worker.
a worker. Yeah, the Gallade is kind of cool. Once during your turn, search your deck for a supporter card, reveal it, and put it in your hand so you can play some cool tech support options.
I guess EXs are rule box Pokemon, so Path to the Peak does shut Gardevoir down.
Yes.
So the worker kind of makes sense. But the lack of Gallade, I thought the other list would have Gallade because that had one of worker. I was like, oh, you go Gallade for worker, bump stadium, draw some cards. Like, that's pretty cool. But this one doesn't have the Gallade, the second place list. But the other top eight list does have Gallade plus worker combo.
And this list also plays a split of the Gardevoir, of the Kirlia as well. It plays a 3-1 split. Obviously, there's the Refinement Gardevoir, discard a card from your hand to draw two. Really good, solid ability. I think, obviously, most people recognize this will be the way to go for the most part. But this does play the one Mirage Step Gardevoir, Kirlia, or Water Duplicates for the Informed, for the Greninja players of the past. For a psychic energy, you search your deck for up to three Kirlia and put them onto your bench, then shuffle your deck. So you can get to a situation where you have five Gardevoir in play, theoretically, right? Because you can manually evolve your Kirlias into Gardevoir, and then you can rare candy two Ralts into Gardevoir, right?
It seems weird to not include that as a one of, which is what we saw the top eight list. Maybe that's that second place diff right there. That's how you get to second place. You have to play the Mirage Step. Even playing like two of those makes sense to me in my head, but the refinement is very powerful, of course. And I assume, especially in games where you probably go second, you're going to want to get out like a turn two candy guard. But both lists don't even play that many candy. It's two and three on the candy split. So, yeah, I don't know. To be honest, looking at these rotation lists, there's just like not that much interesting stuff, to be honest. It looks like the new set didn't really change up too much. Like, it's just like, how do we... We need a like rotation hits, and it's like, okay, how do we take the best decks from last format and put a band-aid on them because we lost all of their broken cards, and now we have to make do with Clara's over Rods and stuff like that, which I don't know, that kind of sucks. It makes me less hype for rotation looking at these lists, to be honest.
Yeah, no good recovery option is feeling like an L right now. Just the Miriam supporter, pretty much. Which is okay for some decks, but I think overall, generally not going to be cutting it. Then we can look at the Mew decks. I mean, there's really not much to talk about with Mew, though, because it doesn't... I mean, it is Fusion Mew, it looks like, is one of the lists that did well here. It's got the Path to Peak, the Four Sealstone. I mean, this looks like a standard deck right now, right?
Yeah. One Meloetta has got to be cringe, but besides that...
It's got the Arvin, search your deck for an item card, a tool card, and put them into your hand, and then shuffle your deck. That card has to be terrible, right?
Well, I mean, it gets you to, like, Choice Belt plus Tablet. Right, I
think that's... yeah.
That, oh, okay, four, sure. It gets you four Seal Stone, which is that's anything, true, right? True. So I guess that might be the reason to play it. it seems okay. No, but yeah, Mew seems like we were saying, Mew seems pretty good, especially if none of the guard for players are playing Drapion. I'm down.
We see Featherball making an appearance. Well, I mean, with no Quick Ball, right? There is only one Nest Ball, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting, yeah.
But I guess it's because it's like. Quick Ball you can always burn out of your hand. Nest Ball you can't. Once you fill that's your bench, true. Nest Ball is just a card that is stuck, right?
Yeah, but only playing four VIP Pass, four Ultra Ball, and then not having any Quicks and going one Feather. I don't know. That doesn't feel great, to be honest. Like, that feels just like a lack of...
Start your VIP Pass, bro. Get good.
I mean, that's what you want to do, but sometimes you didn't get there and you wish you had Quick Balls to, like, barely struggle along to get to the VIP Pass.
Yeah.
Losing Quick Ball will definitely be a hit from you, for sure. That's, like, one of the best cards in the deck, so...
This other list plays... All right, so here's one that's no Fusion Strike. They got top 16. It's just four... There's no Oricorio or anything in here. It's just 4-3 Mew, 4 Genesect. And then, like, Judge, Path, Avery, Cross Switchers. Yeah. Kind of more similar to what we're used to. This list looks like all gas.
Yeah, I like this list a little bit more. Dude, this is, like, proof that Mew was the most broken. It's still surviving. Palkia, Arceus, gone. Lugia's still here, but Mew has been here the whole time and is gonna stay here.
Yep.
God, we have to wait a whole nother rotation, but Mew will probably still be like a tier one deck. I guess it's tier two right now, probably, but Mew's the one, the survivor.
In addition to this standard event, there was also an expanded event. We don't really have all the results for it yet. I imagine if they can get them, they'll get added to Limitless. But the winner did tweet. Also, it's by disgusting. The way, these trophy cards that they get in Japan.
They're so cool.
So sick, right? Like, we get a stamp on an Ultra Ball for an IC, you know? And they get this? Are you kidding me?
I'm definitely open to them doing a recall on the champion Ultra Ball to give me a champion, one of those for sure. So hit me up. It's even graded now. So, you know, make the swap happen.
But yeah, this deck looks disgusting, by the way. Gross. In expanded. I mean, you've got Lugia V-Star. Obviously, you've got Battle Compressor to just discard your Archeops right away. You've got Tapu Lele to search out Wally, so you can just go second, turn one, Lugia V-Star. And then you've got four double dragon energy, all these broken dragon type attackers.
What does the Garchomp do?
The Garchomp for four energy, it does 220 damage anywhere, but you discard three energy attached to it. So it's like a good snipe attacker.
Yeah. And then Guzzlord can just draw two prize cards.
Yep.
Wait. And the other one is Tina Chomp?
Tina Chomp, yeah.
Wait, but there's no damage.
GG end, bro.
So it's just for GG end.
Probably. And even in the recap, this is all based on Google Translate, but you can see the winner's tournament run. I thought this was really funny that we should just point out. But yeah, just talking about how they went through the tournament. Looks like they beat a Dragon Lugia, beat Dragon Lugia, beat a Mew, beat another Lugia, beat another Lugia. There's just a ton of this Dragon Lugia deck. And it says they beat an Alolan Meowth deck. And so, someone in the replies asked, what deck is Alolan Meowth? And their reply was, it looked like a LO deck. That's some translation issue. But the only Pokemon I saw was Alolan Meowth because I used GG End GX on the first turn, smiley face.
Ridiculous.
Oh man, poor Alolan Persian player.
Well, hold on, we don't know for sure. What's his was it, what was his name? Oh, Sexy Garfield. Shout out.
Oh yeah, man, poor smug Alolan face Persian. But yeah, I mean, expanded wild wild west. Azul, looking at this list, does this make you miss expanded at all?
No, not at all. I'm so glad we still don't have expanded. What is the card behind the giraffe? Is that a Drapion?
Yeah, it's a Drapion, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I'm not missing expanded at all after seeing this. This is like you're going like turn one. If you go second, GG end away two of your opponent's Pokemon, Silent Lab. Like, that's just stupid.
I don't know, man. I think stuff like this, I mean, it's obviously it's cool. Cards. It is really cool, but like it's so toxic at the same time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I'm surprised there's no Giratina EX in here to like hit him with, but maybe it's just not that good. I thought turn one, what is it called again? What was the attack?
Oh, Chaos Wheel.
Yeah, no Chaos Wheel. I thought Chaos Wheel would
be. It doesn't
be
really matter if they just Archeops the energies out of their deck and one hit KO you.
Yeah, I guess if they're doing the same. What did it used to lock? What did it lock though again? Is it stadiums?
Stadium special energy and tools.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could like put a Pact of the Peak in play and then trap it in play. But I guess if they just have Field Blower, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, just... I mean, if you lock them out of getting Archeops, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, but absolutely. Yeah, it's just silly for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this list plays two Field Blowers and
four special charge. Yeah. Sheesh.
I wonder on average how many turns these games last. Like,
it's got to be three, right? There's no way it's ever more than three.
It's got to be three.
Insane. I wonder if there's any one prize decks in the format. There has to. I mean, one prize doesn't even seem terrible, right? Like Night March? No, maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Congrats to them. I mean, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Expanded at all. It's cool to see the decks that come out from it still, but I'm glad it's not part of the competitive circuit right now. I do think it should return, but and I say this every time we kind of talk about it, but it should return with some kind of... They should rotate up to, like, Sword and Shield on or something.
Yeah.
And then we kind of start again from there and be more aggressive with banning cards is how I think they should approach it. Like
the Sun and Moon era light, really just kind of killed Expanded, I think. Like, but by the way, Sword and Shield on would just be current standard. I don't know if you realize that.
Yeah, yeah. But then okay. We maybe wait two rotations and then go Sword and Shield on. Like, don't have it expanded again for another season and then bring it back.
The Sun and Moon era just had so many, like, broken cards. Like, these control and the tag teams. Like, Sun and Moon just made it so... I guess, like, even for X and Y, though, it's like the only cards that get played from these old generations... It's like just the new Pokemon with the broken old trainers. And then like sometimes a really good support Pokemon, right?
Yeah. You don't play. We're not playing Reshiram and Zekrom anymore or anything like that.
Yeah. No Reshiram, Zekrom. We got the Versus Seekers, Special Charges, all those things. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I think stuff like this is cool, but I can't imagine wanting to compete for money and championship points and prizes in this format, right? Like, this feels like it would be fun to play with a friend and just be like, dude, look at this ridiculous idea I came up with. And that has always been one of my favorite parts of Expanded, right? Is like the Expanded card pool favors the older players. It favors people with the card pool knowledge because you can come up with crazy ideas. And like, it really anything is possible in Expanded, but at the same time, like, because anything is possible, it makes the format a little tough.
Yeah, unenjoyable, but when it's actually competitive. Yeah, if it's just like more for fun, PTGO, ladder games, whatever, then it's like definitely different.
Well, Azul, I think that's going to do it for us this week. You got any other thoughts about Perth coming up or the results from this weekend or the results from the Champions League?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I guess the one thing that's kind of a downer is it makes rotation look less exciting than what I thought it was going to be. But hopefully that's just kind of the first major tournament results, right? Because Tina was apparently broken. From what we saw, there's no Tina in top 16, which would be a surprise if it is the BDIF. So hopefully there's just still a lot to work out. And maybe this is just kind of a weird top 16 result. I don't know. It would be cool to see the meta share, right? Of what was actually the most played deck and all that stuff. We don't have that. So
I imagine there was a stream from the tournament, right? So I kind of want to go back and watch and just kind of see what else went down, you know, what else was on the stream, what did well, what lost. Yeah.
Definitely maybe take a look at it at some point for sure. We were curious to see what else was actually on the stream and stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. There is a stream, so I'm gonna go back and watch some of this for sure.
Boss Box versus Gardevoir.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, Maraidon.
There's the Maraidon.
Versus Tina. There we go.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to see what went down. All right, everyone. Well, we really appreciate your support as always. Thanks so much for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoyed, please be sure to leave a like on the YouTube video. Be sure to leave us a rating, a review, all those good things over on your favorite podcasting platform. It does help us out a bunch. It takes just a second. We really do appreciate it. Thanks for all the people who came up and said hello to us at all these tournaments the last few weeks. We don't really talk about that much, but yeah, we, you know, do appreciate people coming up and saying they enjoy the podcast and stuff like that. The content that we put out does mean a lot to us to know that the people out there are enjoying what we're doing. So appreciate the continued support.
Yeah. We left them from there. If you guys want to stay up to date, check out our Twitters. I'm at Azul_GG. Chip is at Chip Ritchie. And then the podcast at Uncommon_Energy. Are you waiting for me to like mess up on one of those?
You were just looking over at me like making sure you weren't going to mess up on one of them. You kind of paused on your own Twitter handle, so that had me kind of confused.
Good luck to everyone going to Perth Regionals this weekend. And then we'll catch y'all next week. Every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Eastern.
7 a.m.
7 a.m. Eastern. See ya.